It's Monday, March 18th, and it's six more years in power for Vladimir Putin. We start here.
It's not an election, it's just a fake.
Russia's president wins re-election without any real challengers.
They're either in exile, imprisoned, or dead.
But the opposition still found a way to disrupt the voting. Former President Trump escalates his rhetoric as the general election kicks off.
It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it.
But his campaign insists he's not promoting political violence. And want to pay less when you're buying or selling a house?
We were able to save, you know, many tens of thousands of dollars.
Why that American dream could soon become a reality. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Elizabeth Schulze. Hey there, Brad's off today, but I got you covered in the meantime. And we're going to start with a look at the results of Russia's presidential election. To be clear, it's hard to even call it an election because there really was only one contender, and that, of course, was Vladimir Putin.
There is no election. We all know who's going to win.
I'm not agree with the results of the election.
This weekend, voters in Russia headed to the polls to cast their ballots, and late Sunday, state-run exit polls showed that Putin secured an overwhelming victory. That means that Putin, who's already been in power for nearly a quarter century, is poised to stay on as president for another 6 years. In an address on TV late last night, Putin celebrated the results. And for the first time, he addressed the death of his fiercest critic and opposition leader, Alexei Navalny. Putin claimed without proof that he'd agreed to free Navalny from prison just days before his death. And while these elections are anything but an emblem of democracy, voters in Russia did find a way to show their dissent. Dozens showed up at Navalny's grave to symbolically cast their ballots for him. Let's bring in ABC foreign correspondent Lama Hassan. And Lama, what exactly did we see in this election over the weekend? Like, what did this look like?
So, Elizabeth, it's pretty interesting. Look, for the first time, the Russian presidential elections, the voting was open for more than one day. This was a three-day event. And voting took place over 11 time zones across Russia and also the occupied territories in Ukraine. On Friday, we saw President Vladimir Putin casting his vote online, because these are the first elections in Russia that allowed people to vote online, and that's exactly what he did.
Putin, Vladimir Vladimirovich.
The polls closed on Sunday, and as expected, the exit polls did show that President Vladimir Putin has won. And not only did he win, he actually won with a landslide, and that's according to the exit polls, securing almost 88% of the vote. And this really isn't a surprise, because we did expect him to win this election, because he doesn't really have any serious or meaningful challengers. They're either in exile, imprisoned, or dead. One of the only real potential presidential candidates was Boris Nadezhdin.
There is alternative for Mr. Putin, and it's me.
He was removed from the ballot after the Electoral Commission said there were irregularities in the signatures, and so he couldn't support his candidacy.
So we are sure that all the signatures is good. This is all the signatures of real people.
But he also happens to be someone who opposed the war in Ukraine.
I called this the fatal mistake of Putin.
So Putin didn't really have any major opposition. You know, it was a foregone conclusion. And he's already planned his Victory Day parade. And I think what is interesting, what has been interesting, is the reaction from world leaders. And as you can imagine, Elizabeth, they have been swift. So the British Foreign Minister, David Cameron, already posted on X. He said that this is not what a free and fair election looks like. And the White House and Germany both echoing that sentiment as well.
And when you talk about the lack of opposition to Putin, Alexei Navalny's wife had called on his supporters after Navalny's death to make their voices heard in this election. Was there that opposition?
You're absolutely right, Elizabeth. You know, Alexei Navalny's widow, Yulia Navalnaya, as well as Navalny's allies, they asked for supporters to flood polling stations around the world, including Russian embassies, to show up at midday on Sunday to spoil their ballots or vote for any other candidate. And they did.
Just to see that we're together against war and against Putin.
It's not an election. It's just a fake.
We saw long lines at polling stations around the world. Yulia even herself protested at the embassy in Berlin.
It just can't be so that a month before the election and already during the presidential campaign, Putin's main opponent, already imprisoned, was murdered.
And what she did was she wrote her husband's name when she cast her ballot. And they also wanted the protest to be a silent protest. They asked people to turn up without placards or signs or shouting or making any noise, because otherwise they would get arrested.
Even if my vote does not affect anything, my conscience will be clear for myself and, as I believe, for the future that I want to see for our country.
But they did manage to flood those polling stations, and it was quite something to see. Others, however, decided to attack voting sites with Molotov cocktails. We saw video and images of people throwing Molotov cocktails at polling stations, and some people even, they poured green dye into ballot boxes, and that's a nod to Navalny, who had an attacker throw green antiseptic on his face. So that was a nod to him. Now, we are hearing that more than 70 people were arrested.
Wow. And yet, even with that opposition, these results showed a landslide victory for Putin. Does this tell you, Lama, that there actually is support for Putin and his policies in Russia?
Yeah, no question. I mean, people did turn out to vote for him. You know, as you can imagine, so many news outlets were really interested in these elections. And so, you know, they went out and they spoke to people and they said, point blank, we are voting for Putin. We're very happy. In fact, there was one woman outside the Russian embassy here in London.
Honestly, I'm quite happy with what we've got. At least we know his policy. I know where he's going to.
She said, look, it's a private question, but I'm happy to answer it. I am voting for Putin. So, of course, with these numbers, you know, there are people who are quite happy with what he's doing domestically and abroad.
Right. Yeah. And that interview you mentioned with the woman outside the embassy was on Sky News. So I guess my question then, Lama, is do these results embolden Putin, especially in justifying his invasion of Ukraine?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Elizabeth. I think what this election or the election results were designed to do, I think, is to ensure that Putin has the mandate from his people, and not only at home, but also for the war in Ukraine. And some analysts have said that they believe this win, this victory for Putin, will essentially give him a carte blanche to just basically keep the war going in Ukraine.
Right. And that's, of course, as additional military aid for Ukraine is still stalled here in Congress. Lama Hassan, thank you so much for breaking all this down.
My pleasure, Elizabeth.
Next up on Start Here, former President Trump's campaign is playing cleanup after a rally riddled with inflammatory comments. That's after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's now official that the 2024 presidential election is a rematch between former President Trump and President Biden, meaning voters should prepare for an intense nearly 8 months of attacks between those two campaigns. Trump this weekend was out on the campaign trail in Ohio, and if you've seen any of his recent rallies, you'll notice that they often start with what's sort of a tribute to the January 6th rioters.
Please rise for the horribly and unfairly treated. January 6th hostages.
It's a surprise to no one that Trump's rallies are filled with inflammatory comments, but his rhetoric this weekend did seem to take a darker turn as he was blasting Biden's record related to the auto industry.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole... That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it.
The Biden campaign was quick to pounce, accusing Trump of threatening political violence, pushing for another January 6th. So I want to get right to ABC's White House correspondent, Mary Alice Parks. Mary Alice, just kind of give us the context for these comments from Trump saying that it will be a bloodbath if he doesn't win.
Well, you heard there, Elizabeth, that he was talking about economics. He was talking about the auto industry. He was talking in that moment specifically about tariffs. He's been, you know, he's threatened tariffs in the past, been against any kind of like offshoring, any kind of movement of manufacturing out of the country, of course. But listening to it, I got to tell you, he switched tones. Like, that's why it landed differently. Now, like you said, the Trump campaign played cleanup. They were on defense all day, saying that he was just talking about an economic bloodbath, I guess, that he was just talking about trying to compare his economic policies to Biden's economic policies.
The president's statements concerning bloodbath were about what would happen in the auto industry if actually the Chinese manufacturers who were coming into Mexico were permitted to import into the United States.
But in the larger context of his rally, this was one of many moments that seemed to be referring to violence. And that larger context, I think, is really crucial.
The first day we get into office, we're going to save our country, and we're going to work with the people to treat those unbelievable patriots, and they were unbelievable patriots and are.
He not only started his event talking about January 6th rioters, he told his crowd to stand up and stand at attention to pay tribute to January 6th rioters, glorifying the violence, almost as if saying that they, not almost, he continued to call them great patriots. And it is that greater context that he delivered this comment, and obviously part of why it's getting such a big reaction.
And it wasn't the only controversial thing that he said in that rally either.
Oh, no, of course not. I mean, during the course of the rally, he also said that all mail-in ballots are hoaxes, even though we obviously know that from election officials, often mail-in ballots are more secure. He said that if he lost this election, there might not be any other future elections. And he really ramped up dehumanizing language against certain migrant groups.
Well, I don't know if you call them people. In some cases, they're not people, in my opinion, but I'm not allowed to say that because the radical left says it's a terrible thing to say.
And we have seen some of that language in the past. We know that the border and immigration, a key issue of this election, but this language literally saying that he doesn't think migrants should be considered people sometimes, I mean, obviously really stuck out.
You've been to a lot of these rallies, Mary Alice. How does this language play when you're there among his supporters?
It's a total split. It totally depends on the town and the makeup of the crowd. I have seen sometimes where the entire crowd is with him. And when he talks about January 6th, the entire crowd is chanting and has his back and is feeding off of that energy. I have also been in crowds where it is very clear that some people are not comfortable with it. And I would say that's really true on the comments about immigrants as well.
We're taking in snakes. We're taking in snakes.
Yeah, people that back him are pretty used to racially charged language, to say the least. I mean, he has made offensive comments towards immigrants literally since the first time he launched his very first campaign. I think that on the January 6th, on the nods to any kind of acceptance of political violence, it's much different. And, you know, when we think about going forward, you know, you were talking about how this was the official week where two candidates clinched their nomination. This is the official start of the general election. And that is, of course, going to be the challenge for the former president. I mean, he lost last time, so he needs to win more votes or get people to not vote for Joe Biden. Fine, stay home or come over. But in theory, win more votes. And I am not convinced you win independents, you win over those Nikki Haley voters with comments like that about January 6th. That is not the kind of politics that brings people in.
And we've seen now that we're in this general election, a lot of the top Republicans who criticized Trump after January 6th, like Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, they've now thrown their support behind him. One person who's not done that is former Vice President Mike Pence. What did you make of Pence over the weekend on Fox News, basically saying he won't endorse Trump?
In some ways, remarkable, right? The man that literally ran with him twice, that served with him, his number two. If anyone was going to endorse, in some ways, the decision not to endorse feels like the biggest one.
It should come as no surprise that I will not be endorsing Donald Trump.
On the other hand, like you said, because so much of the Republican establishment has rallied behind Trump in that way, it makes Pence's decision feel smaller. But actually, Pence is so interesting, just kind of to that point I was making on that split. In an interview this weekend, Pence sort of defended Trump's odd, to say the least, bloodbath comment and gave him the benefit of the doubt that he was talking about the auto industry and economics. But when pushed about January 6th, I mean, remember, Elizabeth, the rioters were chanting to hang Mike Pence. When pushed on how Trump treats January 6th, convicted felons, Mike Pence was very clear. He thought that was unacceptable.
So trying to both support him in some ways, but still keep that distance and that criticism.
I mean, clearly he is drawing a line.
Marilyn Sparks, thank you so much for all of your context and analysis.
Thanks.
Okay, one more quick break. And when we come back, a landmark settlement could mean that you pay less when you're buying or selling a house. One last thing is next.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
And one last thing. It's rare when we're talking about the housing market these days to think about prices going down, but that could actually be about to happen after a groundbreaking settlement with the National Association of Realtors. On Friday, the group that represents 1.5 million real estate agents nationwide announced it had agreed to some big changes as part of a $418 million settlement. One of those changes has to do with how much you pay real estate brokers commission. Typically, when you're selling a house, you'll pay between 5 to 6% commission on the price of the home sale. The commission is split between your agent helping you sell your house and the broker working with the buyer who takes over your house. Commission varies by state and city, but rates are generally a lot higher here than in other parts of the world, where they're closer to 2 or 3%. Now, assuming this settlement is approved by a federal judge, cheaper commission could be the norm for Americans as soon as this summer. Fred Glick is the CEO of a real estate brokerage in LA.
A buyer will now be able to go and shop for a buyer broker and negotiate what that commission is.
He says the changes brought on by this settlement would allow home buyers and sellers to more easily negotiate commission with their brokers up front.
Now, you will know up front, before you even do anything with any agent, what it's going to cost you to use that agent.
And that could end up saving sellers a lot of cash. Think about it. If you're selling a $400,000 home, that's about the median home price in the U.S., you'd be paying $24,000 in commission at the typical 6% rate. Cutting that rate in half to 3% would save you about $12,000 on the sale.
We were able to save, you know, many tens of thousands of dollars that we were able to use for subsequent expenditures on the house that we purchased.
But this money saved from buyers and sellers could be money lost for real estate agents, and that could force some agents to leave the industry altogether. It's a change that might hit a little bit too close to home. Okay, you can get much more on all of these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Elizabeth Schulze. Have a great day.
We
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.